a culture of aviation safety and new regulations to go with it. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. And we're here today to go back to the October issue and talk about two articles that Bob wrote, which address two different sides of the solution to the accident rate in general aviation. One, developing a culture of safety, and the other, one that Bob has said would eventually be necessary, changing the FAR. Bob, thanks for taking some time out for our listeners today.
Well, thanks, Paul. This should be an interesting discussion.
I agree. You know, a lot of people have said that we need to change the culture of aviation. Obviously, the alphabet groups are on the voluntary industry standards kind of consensus-based path to improving the accident rate, if it matters to them at all. And you have often said that you think it's going to take more than that, that they're going to have to actually be changes in the antiquated rules that have governed the skies since World War II if we're going to have a meaningful improvement in safety. And in the October issue, you talked about both. Let's start with developing a culture of safety. You talked about a specific in-flight experience that I think we should start with as the premise of this half of the conversation.
Thanks, Paul. Yes, I was doing some commercial pilot training here a few weeks ago with an individual in his own airplane, and had an interesting scenario that evolved. It was totally unpredicted. The weather did not fall out as predicted. We had issues with the airplane before we left the ground that caused later problems. And let me start with issues with the airplane. We had discovered that the panel-mounted GPS data card, the current database, was out of date. We had also discovered that there had been no 30-day VOR check as required by the rules for the VOR, and we knew we were going to be going into instrument conditions. There was nothing we could do at the time about the out-of-date GPS card. We simply did not have the updates with us. We did, however, in the interest of good, culturally sound, safe-minded pilots, we did take a few minutes and complete a VOR ground check to make sure that the VORs on the aircraft were working properly. So we took off knowing we would be legal in IFR flight. When we got to our destination outside of Pittsburgh in a Latrobe, PA, we had discovered that the clouds and the visibility was much lower than predicted. And they were calling for a GPS approach to the runway. And we're right down at GPS minimums. Now, can we legally fly that GPS approach with an out-of-date nav card? It was only out-of-date one cycle. We had the chart. The chart was current, but the nav card was out-of-date. The answer is no. You cannot legally do that. So we said, all right, we refuse the GPS approach. We could fly an ILS to the in the opposite direction on the opposite runway. There's only one runway at the airport. And we would be legal with the ILS because we had checked our VOR, and that's part of the ILS system. But that would necessitate a downwind landing with a 20-knot tailwind on a 5,000-foot runway. Not a real good option. Was it doable? Sure. We were in a Cessna 182. Could be done, but is it prudent? In my opinion, no. I didn't want to do that either. So off to our alternate. But we didn't have an alternate. The weather conditions were such that no alternate was required following what we know as the 1-2-3 rule, 1 hour before and after 2,000-foot ceiling, 3 miles visibility. Everything was predicted to be well within those minimums. But we needed an alternate, so we had to go fishing around, and the nearest alternate we could find had only one approach, and that was a VOR approach. And because we had taken the time to validate or ground check the VOR, as required by the rule, every 30 days, we were legal to go in there. We landed on the VOR approach, and everything worked out fine. In that exercise, Paul, I worked very diligently to convey to my commercial student this notion of cultural change. We could have flown that GPS approach with an outdated card. chances are nothing would have been wrong with that in terms of outcome. We could have landed with a 20-knot downwind, a tailwind on a 5,000-foot runway. Yeah, the chances are we would have made it all right. But that's counter to the cultural change that we need as pilots. We need to be thinking as if we were airline operators, as if, not under Part 121 rules, but as if, and use all the judgment associated there too. So that's an example where if everybody would abide by those common sense things, that even though it may be operationally doable, is it prudent? Does it make sense? And is there a better solution? That's the cultural change that we need. Whether or not that'll happen, I don't know.
Well, and when people compare general aviation to the airlines, they also talk about all the other resources available to an airline pilot. That card would not have been out of date, for example, if you were flying an airliner. Someone else would have taken care of that. Well, Bob, when we come back from the break, let's talk about the rulemaking side of it, because obviously a lot of people don't give a second thought to flying on an outdated card. There are going to be some rules looked at, and Randy Babbitt has started that process. We'll talk about that after the break. Bob Miller is my guest. Back with more in a moment. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3320.
Welcome back to the special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot, talking about cultural change in aviation versus rule changes and how both may be required if we're going to make any progress on the what Bob likes to call the unrelenting fatal accident rate. And Bob, in the October edition of Over the Airwaves, you talked about an announcement made by Randy Babbitt recently, which says they are going to start taking a look at changing the regulations in a meaningful way. Tell us what you think about that.
Well, it's about time is what I think about it. In a book I've quoted a number of times in the past by Malcolm Gladwell, The Tipping Point, How Little Things Make a Big Difference. I believe the industry now, all the way from the alphabet organizations through to the FAA, has finally reached a tipping point. We're fed up with this unrelenting fatal accident rate. The fact that 250 fatal crashes occur every year, year after year after year, the rate is not improving. Something needs to be done. And Randy Babbitt now apparently is going to take the bull by the horns. He announced earlier this year with the formation of something called the Aviation Rulemaking Committee, or ARC. He said that they will review everything from the way we train pilots to the way we retain our pilot certificates. Quoting Babbitt, he said, "Everything is on the table. This effort is part of a 5-year plan for transforming GA safety." And notice the name of his effort is called the Aviation Rulemaking Committee. Everything's on the table. They are going to be looking at rules, and I hope by gosh and by golly that our alphabet organizations, including AAA and AOPA and NBAA and GAMA, finally get behind this effort. The rules are going to change. We have antiquated rules that have been on the books since 1941. Examples are just replete throughout the FARs of things that do need to be changed. And I think it's about time. I think we have to get behind this effort, and frankly, we need to do it.
Well, you've noted in the past, Bob, that if general aviation hours flown were to plummet precipitously, we talked about this a few weeks ago in terms of the denominator in the accident rate calculation, that we don't have a reliable denominator. But applying that incentive here, if the FAA, I would think the FAA is bordered at least in part by knowing that if they kill off general aviation or come up with a set of rules that makes it much, much harder to fly, I think there's some political pressure not to do that. So I for some reason, maybe I'll regret saying this, I don't fear that this will be too onerous when it's done.
I don't think it'll be too onerous, and we will not kill off general aviation. I mean, we have to come to recognize that a flight instructor can not have taught for the last 30 years. He could be an airline pilot with a flight instructor certificate, and he takes an online FERC flight instructor refresher course every 2 years. That makes him still current and legal to teach a person how to fly an airplane. That is, Paul, that's absolutely absurd. The fact that you can be an instrument flight instructor and never once been in the clouds is absurd. These are all in the rules. The fact is you can be a flight instructor and never soloed an airplane. That's in the rules, and that's just a couple of dozens of these antiquated rules that have to be fixed. And I don't mean arbitrarily and capriciously changed. Let's get industry people, organizations in there, and let's realistically look at the bad ones. In a rule book that's 3 inches thick, we as an industry have got to understand and accept the fact there's some broken items in there. Let's see if we can fix those. We can be on the road to improving our GA safety record.
Well, I wish Randy Babbitt all the luck in the world. I kind of have to shake my head and have a dark bit of humor to chuckle at when I note that he's talking about a 5-year plan by an agency that hasn't been able to get a 4-year funding renewal done. But
it won't happen. I'll say this: the Aviation Rulemaking Committee charge will not. I'll make the same bet that I made with Doug Stewart, and that is with SAFE that we're not going to see a meaningful outcome in this effort. The same as we're having difficulty seeing a meaningful outcome with SAFE's efforts, because there's just too many vested interests by big membership organizations who are married to the status quo. They're saying the system we have is the devil we know, and they're afraid to make a change because that will become the devil we do not know. And I think we've got to be a little bit more open-minded, be a little bit more objective, and if we work together as an industry, the devil we don't know could actually be an angel in disguise. How's that, Paul?
That's almost flowery, Bob. All right, well, we'll watch this with interest. I'm sure we'll see some, obviously, if it gets to the point of official notices of proposed rulemaking, the fire will be lit and there'll be lots to talk about.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, we'll talk to you again next Monday. Bob Miller has been my guest. You can find Bob's free monthly newsletter at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.